Whether you're going down the road.
SaskAg Today with Doug Faulkner. Good afternoon and welcome to SaskAg Today. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from Adam Piccolo of PI Financial in Winnipeg. And he'll be talking about what the canola and wheat markets have been up to this week. As well, like peas, Canada has become increasingly reliant on China as the main export destination for malting barley. Peter Watts is the managing director of the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center in Winnipeg, and he'll tell us about that. Despite numerous calls for an election over the carbon tax, the federal Tories did not succeed in that venture yesterday. However, it made for an interesting question period yesterday with a lot of jabs between Tory and Liberal MPs in the House of Commons. We'll hear about that as well. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of SaskAg Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. The May canola contract continued its upward trajectory, and according to a commodity futures advisor, it hit a high this week. Adam Piccolo with PI Financial says the price of canola reached $652.10. It was also up $9 a metric ton on the week to around the $639 range.
So again, we were a little bit higher than that just a couple days ago, but we are seeing still, you know, a positive trend right now. It seems that funds are covering a little bit of their short positions right now, maybe again not wanting to hold the record amount that they have going into the springtime here. I would say my kind of target area was that 650 area, which we did kind of hit there briefly on the kind of the lower end now, just to make sure that maybe canola does stay in the upward trend. I'd want to see about 630 hold, which we're not too far away from right now. If we kind of break that 630, 620, and you know, maybe even that 610 to 600 is potential kind of again right now. But the other kind of factor I am watching is the soybean market right now. The bear camp does look to have kind of the edge kind of with this week finishing. There has been some beneficial rains moving across Iowa kind of this week, and more is expected kind of next week. So kind of seeing that, again, good precipitation for the bean market, and that could maybe add a little bit of downward pressure on canola at some point if the palm and soybean oil kind of go lower as well too.
Meanwhile, May Minneapolis wheat was up 5 cents on the week to around $6.53 US a bushel.
Again, we are trading kind of near the lower end of the range. And if we do break around that 640, which we're only about 12 cents away from that, we would be making kind of some new lows kind of on the contract. It does really seem that there's not a lot of positive news kind of when it comes to wheat fundamentally right now. There has been kind of some Russian strikes on Ukraine's largest dam when talking about the war there. But really, right now, it doesn't seem like there's a whole bunch of positive news for the wheat market. You know, there has been, again, pretty sideways kind of trading right now. The increased, you know, aggression in Ukraine-Russia war could be just seen as, depending on what happens with ships and things like that, that could be influence, obviously. Nobody knows what will happen kind of tomorrow with that. But right now, it doesn't seem like that's affecting.
The Canadian dollars hovered around 73 to 74 cents U.S., but the American dollar continues to go up.
The U.S. Federal Reserve this week decided to keep rates the same. They're now forecasting 3 rate cuts this year instead of the 6. So that was something that kind of the markets have been kind of digesting as well, too. But overall, the U.S. dollar has been trending up a little bit. So maybe that's why we're seeing grains maybe down a little bit here on the Friday.
Piccolo believes agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's crop price projection for March didn't affect the markets as much as he expected.
Not as much as I thought, actually, kind of reading through the numbers. I would say right now, kind of more the weather is kind of a bit of a focus. I didn't see much of kind of an impact from that report this week.
And here's his outlook for next week.
You know what, the other thing I'm watching is crude oil. Crude oil is kind of above that $80 a barrel kind of level. It's kind of coming off from that. So that just might be one factor for the Canadian kind of U.S. dollar as well.
Adam Pacallo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Winnipeg. It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, AgriView.
There's a good chance Western Canadian farmers and ranchers will see rain in April and May to get crops started and grass growing. Matt Makins with Makins Weather, based in Colorado, says it's only a forecast, but the El Nino weather pattern is fizzling out and the La Nina weather pattern is phasing in. He says a lot depends on how quickly that transition occurs, but indications are that the transition is moving quickly, which means the La Nina effect will bring moisture and cooler temperatures earlier. That means the Canadian prairies will likely see rain in April and May, and if the transition slows, it could delay that moisture until June and July. Makin says things are shaping up for prairie moisture early in the spring and summer, turning drier toward August and September. Feed barley bids in Western Canada continue to find some support as the calendar turns to spring, with seasonal road restrictions lending some nearby support to prices. Spring road restrictions set axle weight limits for vehicles moving on certain roads to reduce the damage heavier loads can cause during the spring thaw period. Grain, livestock, and equipment movement can all be affected by the spring road bans, as drivers may need to find alternate routes or haul smaller loads. Barley is currently landing in Lethbridge, Alberta, at about $270 to $280 Canadian per metric ton, an improvement of about $10 per ton over the past few weeks. However, with plenty of U.S. corn still making its way into cattle rations, barley supplies remain large in Western Canada, and there may be limited room to the upside. The governments of Canada and Manitoba are providing $16.3 million in grant funding under the Sustainable Canadian Agricultural Partnership to support 101 projects under the Research and Innovation Program over the next 3 years. The funding will go towards research and capacity building to accelerate innovation in agriculture in Manitoba, supporting companies that are leading innovative research and putting Manitoba at the forefront of sustainable agriculture research. Funding is available for stakeholders, including primary producers, agri-processors, industry organizations, academic institutions and research bodies, industry service providers, and Indigenous governments, communities, and groups. A call for letters of intent under the Research and Innovation Program is now open for innovative industry-led research, development, and capacity-building project ideas for funding commencing in spring of 2025. A recent federal funding cut shouldn't affect local 4-H clubs, at least for now. 4-H Canada says its most recent round of funding from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada totals $1.7 million over 3 years. In the past, it has received about $1 million per year. Projected related funding, which rose significantly during the COVID-19 pandemic, has also returned to pre-pandemic levels. However, it will not have an immediate impact on 4-H Canada programming, much of which was already well into planning when they learned of the funding changes. National programming is also a small portion of overall club activity across Canada. Traditionally, 4-H Canada has passed funds from AAFC to provincial organizations. The European Commission wants to prevent Russia from using farm products as a tool to wreak havoc on the EU market and is moving to impose tariffs on grain imports from Russia and Belarus. The tariffs are also aimed at denying Russia revenue, because they will effectively suppress exports to the EU. Imports of cereals, oilseeds, and derived products from Russia and its Belarus ally are just about 1% of the overall size of the EU market, with domestic suppliers providing the bulk. But with angry farmers already worried by the increase of cheap Ukrainian imports, the EU fears Russia will be encouraged to take advantage of the tense situation to further destabilize the 27-nation bloc. EU imports of cereals, oilseeds, and derived products from Russia, including wheat, maize, and sunflower meal, were 4.2 million metric tons in 2023, worth 1.3 billion euros. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and minus 11 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Like peas, Canada has become increasingly reliant on China as the main export destination for malting barley. The industry wants to see the customer list expand to Mexico and various countries in Central and South America. Peter Watts is the managing director of the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center in Winnipeg.
China's our number one market by far for malting barley. So in 2022-23, 75-80% of Canadian malting barley exports went to China. The U.S. would be the second largest market. Probably 10-15% of malt barley exports went to the U.S. and then a little bit to other markets like Japan, for example.
He says we have competition when we're selling malting barley to China.
Yeah, it's the world's largest market. China's 60% or 65% of all global malting barley trade. They're buying 3 to 3.5 million tons annually. Lots of competition in that market from the major suppliers, which include Australia, France, Argentina, Canada. We're the four major suppliers. Australia was essentially sidelined from that market after high tariffs were placed in the spring of 2020. So for about just over three years, Canada had was very competitive into the Chinese market with the absence of Australia. But in the summer of 2023, the tariffs were lifted, so the competition has ramped back up again.
Watts says the Australians have an advantage due to geography.
They're a little closer, freight rates are a little bit lower. Lower cost to get the malt barley into a port position in Australia because producers tend to be, you know, within a 300-400 kilometers of the coastline. So they're definitely a very competitive country when it comes to malt barley.
He adds a strong feed barley market has impacted malting barley as well.
Well, it has a big impact because essentially our export markets are competing with the domestic feeding sector. Malt barley can be used as feed as well, so that provides a price floor. And ever since really the drought of 2021, the supply of feed grain in Western Canada has been relatively tight. Prices have been high. So our export markets have been competing with that domestic market. So it has a big impact on the price of malt barley. And what we've seen now in the past 4 or 5 months is fairly decent supply of feed grain from the 2023 harvest in Western Canada and imports of corn from the U.S. and a drop in export demand has conspired to push prices lower. So that's why we've seen a pretty substantial drop in feed barley values over the past, 4 to 5 months.
Watts says not all farmers grow malting barley under contract.
No, I mean, it depends. Lots would grow it without a contract. It depends a little on where you're growing it and what you choose to grow. A variety like Synergy or Copeland, they don't really need to be contracted in order to market it effectively. Some of the newer varieties, preferable to have a contract. But again, depends a little bit where the producer's growing. If you're close to an opportunity to sell for feed, you might choose not to have a contract, keep your options open. Naturally, if you're close to a malting facility, you probably may as well get a contract.
He says malting barley should receive a premium over feed barley.
Yeah, I think maybe that perspective has changed a little bit over the past 3 or 4 years, just with the high prices we've seen. Producers were probably regularly getting somewhere around $1.50 a bushel premium for a couple of years there for malt barley. You know, historically, if we go back a few years, that premium was probably between 50 cents and a dollar. But I think most producers would want to see a dollar a bushel premium for malt barley in order to make it worthwhile for them to target Dogger Malt.
Peter Watts is the managing director of the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center in Winnipeg. I'll have more on developing new malty barley markets after this. But first, it's time for the livestock market conditions, and they're a presentation of Heartland Livestock in Verdon.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April closed at 187.50 today. That's down 87. June live cattle closed at 182.90, down 160. April feeder cattle closed at 251.50, down 312. May feeder cattle closed at 253.77, down 430. April lean hogs closed at 84.57, down 32. May lean hogs closed at 90.40, up 50. And that's the livestock market conditions. Now we're back with Peter Watts, the managing director of the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center in Winnipeg.
Certainly the re-entry of Australia into the Chinese market is one of the big stories, and it's going to be a game changer for Canada here going forward, back to where we were pre-2020 in terms of competing into that market. And it also means that we need to explore other market opportunities for Canadian malting barley, markets like Mexico, other Latin American markets like Colombia, Peru, and Ecuador all present big opportunities for Canada. But we need to get our varieties accepted into those markets. We talk about brewers being kind of the gatekeepers of new varieties. So it's been a few years since we've sold into South America. We've never really had a solid export program to Mexico. So we've got to work with the maltsters and brewers in those countries to get our Canadian malt barley varieties accepted so we can start selling there.
He tells us what the Central and South American brewers are using for malting barley right now.
They would be importing from Australia, France, and Argentina, the other major suppliers.
Watts explains how they would tell them that Canadian barley is better.
Just the same way we would when we go to China. Canadian malting barley, very high quality. We've got great varieties. They process well. They've got that higher protein content and high enzyme content. So we have a premium product, but as I said, every variety process is a little bit different and has different end-use quality characteristics. So the end users need to get used to those different processing parameters, different quality characteristics, and how that impacts on their finished products. And they'll want to do some pretty comprehensive testing before they do that. So that's our challenge, is getting them the data, samples, and getting those varieties accepted.
Peter Watts is the managing director of the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center in Winnipeg. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after this. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. Despite numerous calls for an election over the carbon tax, the federal Tories did not succeed in that venture yesterday. Tory MPs were the only ones who voted in favor of it, so it won't be happening. But a lot of jabs were thrown in the House of Commons beforehand, including the ones between Alberta Tory MP Shannon Stubbs and Employment Minister Randy Bosanow of Edmonton.
The Liberal schemes and spin jobs can't cover up the cruel fact that the cost of everything is up, and so are emissions, because the carbon tax is a cash grab and not an environmental plan. Albertans will pay almost $1,000 more this year than they get back in fake rebates. So today, Conservatives will vote non-confidence in the costly coalition to axe the tax. But will this Prime Minister finally listen to the majority of Canadians and premiers, spike the hike today, or call carbon tax election?
Albertans are $700 better off thanks to a very real Canada carbon rebate. Mr. Speaker, in my riding of Edmonton Centre, well over 69% of residents want this government to fight climate change. We couldn't breathe the smoke in the air on September long weekend or May long weekend. These guys want to let the planet burn. We're going to defend the planet, put more money in the pockets of Albertans. They can do what they want to do. We're going to defend Canadians and make sure there's a planet for our
and Tory agriculture critic John Barlow went up against Agriculture Minister Lawrence McAuley over the matter.
After 8 years, Canadian farmers are at their wits' end, and this Prime Minister's Liberal NDP carbon tax coalition aren't worth the cost. Mm-hmm. Instead of preparing for a new growing season, farmers are bracing themselves for another carbon tax increase on April 1st. The Agriculture Carbon Alliance surveyed 50 farms and found out they were paying more than $320,000 a month in carbon taxes. That's just 50 farms. There are almost 200,000 farms in Canada. And the punishment is going to get that much worse when the Prime Minister increases his carbon tax 23% on April 1st. Will the Prime Minister give farmers a voice and allow a carbon tax election?
The Honourable Minister for Agriculture and Agri-Food.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate my honourable colleague's question. I believe he and I both canvassed the last election indicating we were going to put a price on pollution. We did put a price on pollution. We also put in place a Canada carbon rebate, which my honourable colleague is well aware, 8 out of 10 people in the country receive more than they pay. And in fact, in Alberta, they received an average family received $450 quarterly. The question is, why does my honourable colleague and the Conservative Party of Canada want to take $450 every quarterly out of the people's pockets?
The honourable member from Foothills.
Well, I think the minister should talk to his own constituents in Prince Edward Island who are paying $1,600 a year in carbon taxes and getting about $1,000 back in the rebate, exactly. Meaning it is costing islanders $600 a year in the carbon tax. And that has consequences. Higher carbon taxes are driving Canadians to food banks in unprecedented numbers. As a matter of fact, in his province, Corner Food Bank is struggling just to keep its doors open for 5,500 families it's serving. Well, the minister support a carbon tax election and give his islanders a voice.
My constituents in Prince Edward Island are fully aware that I told them that we would put a price on pollution. And we also indicated we'd put the Canada carbon rebate in place. In fact, my constituents received $220 every quarterly, and that money is in their pockets. What I cannot understand is why my honourable colleague wants to take that money out of their pockets. Farmers understand there's a problem with the environment. They also understand we have a program in place to address the environment. We have and will continue to do that, Mr. Speaker.
And of course, the carbon tax is due to rise by 23% on April 1st.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed down across the board today. May canola closed at $634.50, down $8.40. July canola closed at $644.10, down $8.30. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.61 per bushel, up 4.5 cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.90.5, up 8.75 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.54.75, that's up 8 cents. May corn closed at $4.39.25, down 1.5 cents. May soybeans closed at $11.92.5, down 19.5 cents. May oats closed at $3.58.25, that's up 4.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. Last week, the Alberta government announced it was dedicating $35 million towards improving their water management system as a way of battling drought. Part of the plan is to use current or create more wetlands as they work naturally to keep water in place. Alberta Environment Minister Rebecca Schultz says right now they're doing more research into the feasibility of the idea, along with any technical work that would be required.
We're looking at storage. We've also said that we would look at opportunities for hydro, better ways to manage water, either in droughts or floods. Ardley is one project that has been, I would say, on the list or been in discussion for a number of years. And so I think it's good to prioritize the work that's being done on that one as well.
On the wetland side, over the years, we've kind of seen a migration of wetlands from southern Alberta to northern Alberta, just because of the of offsets than the way the program works. Does this new program, will that kind of reverse that? Will you actually be creating new wetlands or restoring new wetlands in southern Alberta as well as in the north?
You know, we are working with all nonprofit organizations, as well as community-based organizations, indigenous communities, municipalities, to expand wetlands, restore wetlands across the province. That's why in this year's budget, you're seeing a small increase to the program as well, so that we can speed up some of the work on that. We know, and I often get asked, will this help us for this year's drought? Of course, that work doesn't happen that quickly, but it is important for us to protect, I would say, against drought and flood for future years to come. So that's why we've seen that, I would say, expansion in this year's budget.
She does say they're still gathering information through their water advisory panel.
When we struck that panel, really, of course, the most urgent work is how do we get through the next number of months? How do we get through this growing season? It was important to us to make sure that we had representation from irrigation, from agriculture, from our major industries, as well as small and larger municipalities alike. We do want to look at how we might be able to work together to share best practices, how we might be able to encourage water conservation, how we can better understand of the water that is already allocated, how much is actually being used, what is free to share with others. I mean, that's part of our water allocation discussions that we're having right now to help us get through the next couple of months, especially in southern Alberta. But it's good information to have. Are there areas where we're an outlier in terms of water use compared to other jurisdictions? And again, then, you know, if we are an outlier, how might we encourage that conservation so we can actually maximize the water that we have available in our province, whether that be to support residents or our growing major industries. So I think it's a little bit too early to tell, but I can already say that our water advisory panel has met. They're bringing forward very specific ideas of policy changes that might be able to be made, regulatory changes that might be able to make, how we might be able to speed up some of the projects that we're working on. I've often used the conversation or the example of Pincher Creek and how we've worked with that community to meet their unique needs, how we found an interim solution by moving their water intake valve, how we could speed up the construction on actually getting them access to the aquifer below groundwater. If there are ways that we can speed those processes up, we want to hear that from our major partners. And I know on the town halls, we also opened it up to any water user on those calls who has ideas of how sometimes it's regulatory barriers are getting in the way of our major industries doing the right thing and be able to reuse and conserve water. We need that information from our major water users so that we can better plan for the future.
That's Alberta Environment Minister Rebecca Schultz.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Saskatchewan Institute of Agrologists presented its annual awards yesterday. Six individuals and one organization were honored. Two faculty members from the University of Saskatchewan received the Distinguished Agrologist Award. Dr. Sabine Benitza is a well-known plant pathologist specializing in pulse crop diseases such as aphanomyces. Together with the pulse crop breeders at the Crop Development Center, Dr. Benitza has been involved with the development of 85 pulse crop varieties over the years, peas, lentil, chickpea, and dry bean. Dr. Pierre Huckel is a plant breeder at the Crop Development Center. His work has resulted in significant improvements in wheat productivity. In addition to wheat, Dr. Huckel was also behind efforts to develop the first canary seed approved for human consumption in Canada. Blake Wyseth received the Outstanding Young Agrologist Award. He's the Applied Research Lead at the Glacier Farm Media Discovery Farm near Langham and a research chair at Sask Polytechnic. Wyseth is also currently pursuing a PhD in soil science. Lise Boisvert was presented with the Recognition Award given to the agrologist who has bettered the profession. Boisvert joined Ducks Unlimited in 2014 and relocated to Yorkton, where she is involved in delivering producer incentive forage programs. Boisvert is involved in many volunteer efforts, such as serving as the community garden manager for St. Matthew's Anglican Church. The Honorary Life Membership was presented to Lee Lochran, Lee is currently the Senior Relationship Manager with RBC. He is a creative grain marketing expert with a deep understanding of the different ways farmers can contract and sell their grain. Matrix Solutions was presented the Agrology Excellence Award. The company focuses on environmental stewardship and works to ensure every project it's involved with is executed in a responsible and sustainable manner. There are more than 1,800 registered agrologists in Saskatchewan. And that's today's Farm Bulletin Board. And that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program.